just want to welcome everybody today and thank you for coming. This is the second series of Writing Life Talks we put on. We started as an experiment last spring. We didn't quite know what we were getting into or how well it was going to be received, but it's been terrific. And so I'm thrilled to see a whole new group of folks as well and some old faces from last season. For those of you that don't know me, I'm Carolyn Waters. I'm the Writer Services Librarian, so if any of you are writers and need any assistance, please feel free to contact me. Today's talk, The Changing Face of the News, is one that I think that a lot of us are very interested in, at least those of us who still like reading the paper in print form. How much longer will that be a medium? Although I still often go online as well, so I'm kind of doing both, which I'm sure a lot of you are. We have two really terrific guests this morning, and I am thrilled to introduce them. First, we have Scott Cohen, who is the executive editor of NewYorkDailyNews.com. He is a former producer at ABC News and has been with the Daily News for 2 years now, a bit over a year, and is really great to see that the New York Daily News site has one of the most rising. We don't call them circulations, and what do we call it when the subscribers or hits to page views to newspaper sites? So, and he's going to talk a little bit more about that. We also have Liz Robbins from the New York Times. Liz is actually also a member of the library, so we're thrilled to have her here as well. Liz is a reporter for the New York Times. She's been a reporter since 2000. She formerly worked for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the St. Petersburg Times. And she's been a sports writer for nearly all of that career until a little while ago, about a year ago, she joined the Continuous News Division, which is the online breaking news division, which if you're going on the New York Times site, you'll see all of the breaking news content there. She is also the author of A Race Like No Other, which was published last year about the New York Marathon. I think it's just been released in paperback as well. We're thrilled to say that she wrote quite a bit of it here in the library. So anyway, we do have it in the library, so if you want to read it, it's a terrific book. So, and with that, I'm going to turn it over to Liz, who's going to kick us off, and we'll go from there.
Turn this on. Okay. Good morning, everyone. Thanks for coming. And I see some people have already been reading their paper version of the Times, which we do appreciate. So keep reading it, and we'll talk later about how long that actually will go on. So I want to talk to you about my career and how it has evolved into the web, and just a little bit about where we might be going. So as Carolyn said, I've been a sports writer most of my life. So I began my career in St. Petersburg, Florida, covering high school sports. I did write in 1991 a story on a typewriter, and I faxed it. And then in 1992 through 1996, I actually wrote on a Radio Shack 100 computer that had powered by four AA batteries. And you would send it through a payphone with rubber couplers. The hairdryer is up on that lovely spot there because when I covered the Olympics in 1996, there was this huge rainstorm right when Carl Lewis was running the 100-meter dash, and my computer just got drenched. So the only way to fix it was to dry it with a hairdryer. So this would be the dark ages. I have also covered the U.S. Open for 13 years, and I remember one of the first years for the New York Times, I gave radio dispatches for WQXR. This past year, I tweeted. So that is quite a difference. And this is from this year's incredible match. Some of you may have seen this. So this happened at 10 of 11 on a Saturday night, which meant it was 10 minutes from deadline. So I wrote this story in 15 minutes, and luckily I did get to go back on it, and I did about four versions for the web. And it's quite a contrast to my book, which I wrote in 5 months, and it was 86,000 words compared to the 600 words that I wrote. So I have a lot of experience spanning the technology, news, and different methods. So when I took a book leave, I stayed away from the sports section, and I was in the fifth floor here writing my book. And when I returned, I was hired by the continuous news department, which I actually think is a little redundant because news these days is always continuous. But I write breaking news. So I have been covering the tsunamis in Samoa, the earthquakes in Sumatra, plane crashes. I've covered way too many of those in the last year. Terrorist arrests, mass murders, David Letterman, and Michael Jackson. So I've had my hand in this, and I'll tell you a little bit about how I do that in a few minutes, but I work with reporters in the field, essentially. So this is my byline on this, and I get a lot of help from the people who are either on the ground. I use some wire services to rewrite the copy, and I make calls. I was very friendly with the police chief of Samoa during this whole crisis. So we've gone from the dark ages to the web ages. And I think in just 1 year, I've been amazed at the multimedia of the New York Times on the web. How many people do actually read the web of the Times? Thank you. And how often do you read it? Is it something that it'll just be on the screen, kind of like I used to watch the Weather Channel, it was just always there? Is it, do you update it, or do you just go when you have a minute to look? Right. Do you ever notice how often it changes?
Yes.
Which is what we do, which is what we can do. When I worked for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, I sent a story from the Nagano Olympics, and the website was updated twice a day. So now we update perhaps twice in an hour, twice in 10 minutes. It is really an amazing change. So what we have, as you can see from the Times, we've got amazing interactive content. Did anybody see this story? It got picked up by a lot of news agencies, too, and I couldn't figure out how to do this. This is my first PowerPoint, but you can click on to all of these links, even those dots, to see the relatives of the First Lady, and it was a really great use, and we also had video, and we had audio, and you could pull up the documents. So that is something that we have really learned to be creative with at the Times. So we have live streaming, we have Wikipedia. I'm sure we all go to Wikipedia. We do something called Times Topics, and it's a topics page. It's very similar. And I think our biggest stride on the web has been our blogs. We have more than 60 different blogs, ranging from sports to healthcare, and this is our newest blog. We also have television, arts beat, photography, anything that you want to have a little bit more discussion about and have something more immediate, we have a blog for it. So take a look at that. That's our new building, and that's my desk, essentially. I'm on the third floor, and I have a nice little view of the atrium at all hours. And this is basically our content. This is what we have, as you all can tell. But it really is an amazing platform. We just have so many things going on. And this is what it is. So ink on paper, thank goodness we still have that for a few more years. NewYorkTimes.com, email, RSS feeds, social media. We have Twitter and Facebook. We have, I think the last I heard it was 500,000 fans on Facebook, 1.8 million Twitter followers, 2.0 million downloads on iPhones, 17 million unique monthly visitors, 41 million page views per month, and I'm sorry, we are the number one newspaper site in the world. But we are at New York Daily News, as Scott will talk, has really expanded in New York and expanded around the world, and we all are trying to keep up the competitive advantage here. Oh, sorry, also, how many people read it on their mobile devices? Does anybody know?
I tried.
It's not exactly as pretty as it is in paper or on the big screen, but I'll still read it. So I have to say the energy is really palpable in the newsroom, despite the fact that the economy is, well, not so great, especially for newspapers, and you all know that the news has been grim. We had cutbacks, and hopefully we won't have any more layoffs next year. But what we have right now is this amazing energy of how can we be different? How can we transform our paper? And I'm starting to feel really old, hence the fax machine back there. We have a lot of 20-somethings who are just full of new ideas about interactive content and audio and pictures, and they're running around, and it makes me feel, okay, we've got a lot of hope here. This is going to be great. But we have such a good balance with newspaper people who have been in the business for 40, 50, 60 years, our reporters all over the world. And what we really need to do these days is figure out how to balance expediency versus accuracy, and our depth versus breadth, and really how we can bring all of our resources and integrate them. It's not seamless. We're still working on it. Sometimes our departments don't talk to one another, and we'll have two stories on the web from different departments. But we're working, because we know that's the only way that actually we will survive. So I'm going to talk a little bit about some of four important stories this past year and my role in them. And this day was so amazing. Were you all in New York on January 15th? So the morning began quite cold, and I did a blog from a lead blog, which is basically one of our blogs off the news. And I talked to people in Minnesota about how it was 4 degrees. And it was just how you deal with the winter conditions. I do a lot of weather stories, too. And so I finished that about 1, 2 o'clock, took a little break, and then I got on a conference call with Monica Seles. I've covered Monica for quite a while, and she was entering the Hall of Fame, and this was her conference call with reporters. So I'm asking her the most important question nobody else was asking, and I said, I gotta ask this. I said, Monica, can you tell me, how do you think your career might have been different had you not been stabbed? Do you think about that every day? So she starts answering, and all of a sudden, I've got 4 editors at my desk. And so I don't want to be rude. There's 10 of us on the call, and I'm talking to Monica, and they say, get off the phone now. So I say, thank you very much. I usually ask follow-up questions. I say, thanks, Monica, goodbye. And the plane had crashed into the Hudson River. So I have a TV at my desk, and obviously I see what's going on. So immediately I put together a story based on television, wire reports, Twitter feeds, and our feeds from reporters who were there. So within 20 minutes, I have a story up on the web. That's actually not it, because you could see the timestamp at the top. 9:57, that's a little bit later. So I start working, and our public editor had a really interesting story about this, about how we had both the web, and we had my web story, and we had a blog from City Room giving immediate updates, and then we had a paper version the next day. So this was one of the most amazing days in journalism. I'm sure Scott can talk about that too. And, I mean, the Daily News was right there. We were all doing the same thing. And at first, we weren't sure how many people were on board, so that actually changed. My first version, I believe, said 150, and that was not accounting for the crew. So by the end, I think I did about 14 versions of this story. And at 9:30 at night, I wrote my Monica story and went home. And you can just see the very different stories that we have here. We have the multimedia, the video, the interactive showing the flight, and 6 different stories on the actual flight and the birds. The next day, I got in very early because we have to somehow update it, and that's what I'm doing on the web. So Bob McFadden wrote the story for the paper, so his byline stayed, and then I added 4 new things, and that became part of our new story, which we, again, updated about 17 times that day. So that was an incredible day. We can talk about that later. But the Binghamton murders were really, I think that was a contrast to what happened with the plane, because it was not out our back door. So we were relying on reports from TV, and we finally got stringers there. And in the very beginning, we thought there were hostages. We didn't know how many people had died. And at the same time, we had somebody writing the lead blog, but her updates were from television. So we're basically repeating what the TV was saying, and not all of it was right. So in the very beginning, we just were telling people, here's what we know, just so we can get it out there. So our stories at times conflicted. We got it all on the same page by about 6 o'clock and then filed a story. Actually, my editor and I were working on this together. So I do a lot of editing and writing at the same time, and so Mitch Blumenthal and I wrote this story. Where the web really works and where our blogging really worked, I think, was Iran. I don't know how many people read our accounts on the lead blog. Iran was tough because there was a crackdown on reporting. So we relied on YouTube and reader emails and also people who were there. So our reporter, Rob, tried to vet these people to make sure this was actually going on. And he used new media that we would never use in the paper, with a caveat. He said, "This may or may not have happened today. Please tell us if you think it happened another day." So it was such transparency that, on the one hand, he was covered, but on the other hand, we're inviting readers to become part of our product, which is something the gray lady never used to do, obviously because it was gray. So I think he did a tremendous job, and the lead is now very foreign-focused. And now we get to Michael Jackson. So the New York Times has become a little bit more populist, but in a way that I think still serves the reader, the New York Times reader, and the worldwide reader. This happened, obviously, it was about 6:30 at night, and we had an obituary ready to go, which was lucky. But we, of course, could not verify it immediately. TMZ had the news first. Somehow, I think Tito Jackson was writing for TMZ. Somehow, they just had that story. But of course, we're not going to trust another news source, so we independently confirmed it, and then we wrote it on the web. And the next day was full of what now, and I did some stories with the doctor, Conrad Murray, and the will. But I think the coolest part about our Michael Jackson coverage, again, was the interactive. So we had global reaction, and you could click on one of these people and find out what they were saying. So I thought that was really neat. And this is what they said. So, from Brussels and all over the world. And I'm just going to leave with this slide because this was a piece of our blog. Our Lens blog was for photographers. And it's just something that you didn't see and you can't see in the paper. I'm sorry, I don't know how to do the interactive to move the slides, but here are pictures. It was a unique view of Michael Jackson, and it gave people a sense of him, a quite different Michael Jackson than when he died. And actually, I'll leave with this because I'm from Philadelphia, and this happened last night. As you can see, our updates 14 minutes ago, 2 minutes ago, our updates are constant. And no, you don't see all the news that's fit to print on the website because we can fit anything on the web. I think right now we're just trying to figure out what the next step is, but we, at our core, are all about news. Despite all these beautiful bells and whistles, multimedia, interactive, we're about news. And some way, in some form, the news will always exist. So, thank you.
Hello.
Hi, good morning, everyone. That was a very tough act to follow, but I'll try and without the benefit of visual aids for the most part. So my name is Scott Cohen, and I'm the executive editor at the Daily News website. So by a show of hands, how many of you buy the Daily News on a daily or even occasional basis? Okay, good show of hands. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for the support. A paper like the Daily News, and actually I'm going to grab a copy if I did. So we all know newspaper circulation is fading a bit. We still have our subscribers, but for the most part, a paper, a tabloid like the Daily News, is sold on the front page or the back page. So you like what they're selling on the back in terms of sports. You like the news story and the headlines on the front, you pick up the paper on the newsstand. for the most part. On the web, it works quite differently. You buy the paper for page one or the back page, and you're also buying page 52, page 97. On the web, you're selling each story individually. Now, I say sell, and we can come back to that in a minute, but we all know we're not selling anything because we give it away for free on the web, hence the crisis in publishing nowadays. So our job, oh, I do have visual aids, thank you. Our job is to hook the reader when he or she arrives on the website. So actually, I'll backtrack for a minute and explain that there are three ways in which a reader can find a story online. Does anyone want to throw up their hand and take a guess at what any of those three ways are? Search engine, absolutely. The Googles and the Yahoos of the world. So, for example, if you wanted to find a story on the Hudson crash, you might enter Flight 1549 or Captain Sullenberger, and you would land on either the New York Times, the Daily News, somewhere else. Anyone else with any of the either of the remaining two?
You just go to the sites that you normally go to, right?
Absolutely. So you actively seek out your favorites. You bookmark it, you have a home page when you open up your internet browser. Anyone want to take a stab at the third? Perhaps less obvious.
Someone sends you a link.
Excellent, thank you. You guys nailed it. So you receive a link, someone links to a story. So that can be an email, that can be somebody's blog, that can be a website such as the Drudge Report that deals in linkage or aggregation of other news sources, or a New York Times story that's reporting something that the Daily News had, and they might say as first reported in the Daily News, and certainly vice versa. The second way, people going to their homepage or to a favorite site, that decreases in importance every day across the web. Basically, on the web, you get the stories you want, when you want them, where you want them, be it your laptop computer, your mobile device, Google Reader, which essentially aggregates content for you, or a favorite trusted blog or aggregator like the Drudge Report or even an AOL or a Yahoo homepage. It's our job to work with all three of those components. So once someone's on the site, and we'll go into this in some depth in a moment, as I said earlier, it's our job to keep them there and to hook them. I throw the word packaging around probably 37 times a day to the frustration of my staff, but once someone's in the site, it's all about the packaging. Working with the search engines, has anyone heard of the term SEO, search engine optimization? Excellent, okay. It's a bit of a wonky web-specific term, but essentially one of the three components I mentioned earlier, search engines, Yahoo's and Google's finding your story, we have to help them find it. So you'll notice on virtually any reputable website, you'll notice what's called keywords up high in the story, in the headline, in the photo caption, those keywords. So we'll take the Flight 1549 example a bit further. Captain Sullenberger, U.S. Air, Hudson River, those
birds.
Terms, birds, thank you, engine failure, those terms, those words, keywords, will be prominent all over the story, but particularly in the packaging, in the photo, in the headline, in a subhead or abstract, such as that. On the site, and I'll actually get up if I may. So again, we are a tabloid paper and the website of a tabloid paper, so we certainly take a bit more liberty than the New York Times might take. But what we'll do, we have this really gripping and at times horrific story about a drunk driving crash. So again, you'll notice a few things. DWI mom would be something of a keyword, perhaps not the best example. But what we do is we surround and package a story with content. Inside, we'll have stories not too dissimilar from the one in question. You'll probably all remember a Taconic Parkway crash a few months ago. And then also what we'll do is, for readers we've brought in for this particular story, we'll offer them a bit more through these relateds on the side. So you'll notice on the far right the column labeled Editor's Picks. That's an amalgamation of a host of different stories. Local news, national news, lifestyle, sports, and a mix of media, text, photos, video, that we think essentially offers the reader a bit of what we call a homepage experience, a bit of everything on that one page. So again, you'll see as we go down the right, the crash story, a shocking body image story, a sports story, some photos, a wonderful photo gallery here on animals that have been x-rayed and such. So it's a bit of a mix. Now, packaging, as Liz mentioned a few minutes ago, wonderful ones you shared on Michael Jackson and Mrs. Obama, we also have the reader. Now, again, touched on earlier as well, there's a term that was thrown around about 2-3 years ago quite widely called UGC, standing for user-generated content. You see it every day when you watch CNN, and they solicit readers to send in their photos, their tips to iReport. Is it iReport?
I think it's...
Or is that Fox? Anyone know?
I think it's iReport.
That's Fox?
It's iSomething.
No.
Yes, that's the Fox. The TV stations solicit, TV slash web companies solicit reader contribution, as newspapers have done for years. To this day, we ask on page 2 of the paper, if you have a great photo and want to submit it, here's how. Times does the same thing. That's somewhat old world, but we've adopted it for the new world. So not only do we solicit tips, photos, whatnot, we also solicit ideas and interaction. One huge way the web separates itself from print is that interaction. This is a two-dimensional product. You pick it up, you read it, you may pass it along, but for all intents and purposes, once you finish reading it, you're done with it. You can't send a story on to a friend. You can't comment. You can't participate. Now, one shining example, and dare I say even a fun example, that we like to call out is, you may remember in the early days of the Obama administration, Air Force One did a flyover downtown. So what happened? Oh, about 3 million people freaked out, called 911, 311, their local police precincts, and said, there's a plane flying at an absurdly low altitude in New York, and of course it brought back memories of September 11th. So perhaps 2 days after the story, maybe the third day, in a responsible manner, let's have a little bit of fun with it. So we wrote what essentially is an open letter to the White House. And you can see it in this lead. And if you can't read it, I'll just read the first graph for you. Memo to the White House. Not only was flying a presidential jet for a photo op over downtown in bad taste, it was unnecessary. So we essentially said, you can use Photoshop. And the White House should have used Photoshop. Instead of spending X thousands, if not millions, of taxpayer dollars and scaring 3 million New Yorkers with memories of 9/11, you very simply could have pasted Photoshop over iconic New York images. So to entice the reader and to send them on their way, we, in the right column there, as you'll see, oh, I can actually use my little pointer here. Maybe not. You'll see we took Air Force One and pasted it in iconic New York images. Oh, thank you. You come prepared. So we have Air Force One in the middle of Central Park scene, Bronx Zoo, I think on St. Patrick's Day, if I'm not mistaken. So we, again, gave the reader the idea and let them run away with it. So from that story where we, sorry, I'll scroll back down, at the bottom, told the reader how to join the conversation, how to join the idea, with 3 moderately simple steps. If you know how to upload a photo, you know how to take care of this. So again, with that tease, no pun intended, from the plane standpoint, we landed here. technical difficulties, of course. Bear with me, I apologize. There we go. So, by the end of day one, we had 700 submissions. How did this happen? As I mentioned earlier, I'll just keep going up and down, I apologize. As I mentioned earlier, there are a number of ways a story can be spread on the internet. Sure, a few people no doubt saw it on the Daily News homepage or on the Lifestyle page where we may have housed it. And from that, it exploded. People pasted it on their blogs, they emailed it to friends. There is a Photoshop fan website. There's certainly a website for everything, but Photoshop being one of them. And it just caught fire. It went out what we call virally and spread very quickly. And in fact, a Photoshop competitor, I forget the name of the software, called us and said, hey guys, Photoshop costs $90. Our software is free on the internet. So why don't you mention that you can do it for free and don't exclude anyone who can't afford Photoshop, and we'll in turn tell our users and our subscribers about what you're doing. Sounded good to us, because we didn't want to exclude anyone. So again, end of day one, we had 700 submissions. You'll see the Star Wars shot. You'll see the Brooklyn Bridge shot. I think that's Goldfinger, if I'm not mistaken. King Kong. And then at the bottom, someone's personal family photo of kids hanging around in Central Park. So a great example of how things can move on the web and how, in fact, you can work with and, to speak selfishly, use the reader to do some of your work for you. Gather my notes. Absolutely.
So what we're seeing actually appeared on dailynews.com?
Absolutely.
You selected of the 700, you selected a few, or did you run them all?
Selected a few, but in fact, unless we messed up, here it is. We should have a link to all 700. So we just took a few of the best.
So you didn't censor any of
them? Actually, that's a great question. We did, of course. As you can imagine, we got some not safe for a family newspaper. Let's see, where is it? Perhaps here. I just picked a different one, let's see. I apologize, I can't find it offhand. But yes, there is a gallery currently live within the website that has the now over 1,500 submissions. Which brings me to another point. A story that's on the web never dies, as a rule, and I'm certain the same theory applies or rule applies at the Times. The web is not only an of-the-moment reporting tool, it's a living, breathing archive. In the past, it was microfilm or microfiche. A few years ago, all reporters used LexisNexis to find their archive content. Now it's the web. Nothing comes down. If it's a story with mistakes, the mistakes are fixed. We apologize up front. We tell the reader it is a second or third or fourth version. We address the mistake, and it lives. Nothing ever, ever comes down. And if it does, it's a big mistake, and heads, frankly, roll. So I want to throw it back to you guys. So you've heard these two speeches, one far more eloquent and visually aided than the other. By a show of hands, how many of you are writers, reporters, journalists? Great, quite a few. So how would we put this story on the web, knowing all the tools at our disposal? Blurt it on out. We'd have a text story. We'd have someone write their 1,000 words on the presentation, set the setting in the library, talk about the audience, talk about the speakers. What else could we do?
The question is, would you be doing it for the web or for the newspaper? Would you do it differently for the
You would do it differently. That's a great question. So the text story, the 1,000 words, would probably be the same. There might be some difference in terms of timing.
You have 1,000 word space in your...
Not the Daily News, but we're playing fantasy.
500 words.
500 words.
Yeah.
I'll just jump to a few points. story in 50 words, 5,000 words. No one's going to read 5,000 unless it's the New Yorker, but you can do it if you'd like. The story would largely be the same, but we have, as you can see in the back, video. We also have the opportunity, which neither one of us has touched on, of polling. We very, very, very much enjoy polls. I always say to our young writers and our editors, every story can, perhaps not should, but every story can have a poll or a vote attached to it. And they might shout back, shoot back, perhaps not shout.
No, they'd shout.
We'll give them the benefit of the doubt today. That they can't think of a poll idea. And then I say, well, the story might not be the right story. As you guys know, any story worth its salt has tension. If you can find that tension, you can find a poll. So we might find a poll. We might put a poll on this story.
I have a question.
Sure.
How many people think a print version of our newspapers will still exist in 5 years?
Great poll.
Oh, boy, that's depressing. Okay. All right.
What do you think?
A little less than half. I think in some form we will exist in print, at least in 5 years. Now, this is not any scientific or, I guess, any journalistic enterprise here. I haven't talked to Arthur Sulzberger about this. But I think maybe in 10, 15 years, we may only have a weekend version. Maybe only the Sunday paper or the Saturday paper, because we are expanding on the web. I think a lot has to do with this next step, and that is how we can pay for the web and how we can make some money off of it. If we can somehow figure out what kind of model to use, and we are still discussing that, what kind of pay model, then that will fuel our enterprises for the next few years. But I think it will go away.
Yep. By a show of hands, how many of you would be willing to pay for content on the web? Less hands. Oh.
But don't we all pay for NPR? I know it's so different because one is public and you know we are for profit.
I think unless all, it sounds like price fixing, but unless all newspapers do charge,
yeah.
I think the New York Times did charge it, but they failed.
And that didn't work. Right, right. That's the danger.
Yeah.
Isn't the money in the lion's share of the money made from advertising anyway?
It is.
Absolutely.
It is.
So if you have advertising on the web, you know. What's
we do, but it's not at the same rate as the print version. And you can see these ads that are getting so annoying that are like the whole page, and then they decrease. And I keep thinking, okay, it's 1 minute out of my life, but it's paying my bills, so yay. Yeah.
But it is pennies on the dollar compared to a print ad.
It is.
Absolutely.
Do you think there is such a thing as too much news?
Yes.
And what the point can you establish that that is enough? I'm thinking
you take that.
Yeah.
I just recently retired, and I still like to read books. Believe it or not.
Thank you.
There are lots of people who read books and even books.
Wonderful.
And get the Times every morning and read it. Cover to cover, or depending upon which parts of it are interesting, and go out and go to museums and do lots of other stuff.
Can I have your life? This sounds great.
You have to be tired.
I was just looking at this, you know, minute by minute, everybody was, of course, when that plane crashed into the river.
Right.
Everybody, you know, how many survived and all that kind of thing.
Right.
But, I mean, some of that other stuff. You know, once I had a concept which I could get on the radio, believe it or not, that these things are on the radio. I heard it, and I'll wait till the evening or the next morning. I don't really care in such a way that I want to devote my whole day to waiting till you have another report, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15
minutes. Right.
And I don't know whether my view is a minority view, I mean, because I'm an old guy, but I think I'm on the web, and I occasionally put the Times on the web.
Sure.
What else can you do? But I wonder now, do you think there
That is a wonderful comment. Thank you. What is your name?
Jerry Montreux.
Jerry. We need more readers like you, so thank you very much. First of all, let me clarify. I have no idea if we're just going to be publishing on the weekend in 5, 10, 15, 20. I think of any newspapers that will be around, the Times will be around the longest. So let me clarify that. I don't want to get fired. I often feel like I hit a saturation point with news. I'm living and breathing it every day for 9 hours. I've got a television. I've got so many websites open. I'm, you know, looking at what my competitors are doing. And it is a bit too much. I don't ever remember being assaulted like that, because I think it can be an assault. I mean, when I covered the New York Knicks and the Nets, I mean, I was living and breathing 12 players and coaches in a league, but it wasn't the same always there, whether it's on my BlackBerry and the phone that will ring with a source. But yes, I think there is a danger. We have close to 60 blogs at the Times. But we are trying to curtail, or I guess specialize our information. So people don't have to feel like there's too much. They can just go where they want. That is an advantage of the web. But I think we have to be careful. We have to present news that matters, news you can use, and news that entertains. And we have to be very careful at not giving the reader too much. I think in the Michael Jackson story, we did a bit too much. Every day it was there. But we're also feeding the appetite of our readers. So it's a balance. We haven't found the answer yet, but thank you.
And what the web has done, one of the great many things the web has done, is turn the news cycle into a 24-hour cycle, where we used to be content to wait for the evening news at 6:30 or the morning news, or hopefully the delivery of the newspaper. What we find, knowing our reader, and I can get back to that in just a sec, is that folks who are interested do have an insatiable appetite. They come back again and again and again. So those 14 versions of the Hudson crash that Liz mentioned, there were folks who read all 14 versions of that, be it on their computer, their iPhone, their BlackBerry, whatever it may be. There is an audience for that. And the web, as it's a real-time, breathing, living entity, allows us to see what readers are doing. So newspaper research and the feedback of what sells and the reader reaction to what is in the paper was guesswork at best. We can tell it in near real time, almost minute by minute. That story isn't working, perhaps this story will work. So it helps us, again, that word I mentioned earlier, packaging and programming, helps us to help the readers.
What I don't understand is why computers are very difficult to carry around, even if you have a Mac Air. They're not really that comfortable. So going forward, publisher mentioned that Apple someday might have a really great reader like the Kindle or Sony. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be logical for newspapers to be subscribed to through something like that, and then when you're in China, you just hit the button and you download the New York Times? I mean, it seems to me that's where
we're almost there.
Should be going, and then you would pay for that, wouldn't you? I mean, it wouldn't be free.
Right. Right.
And you wouldn't really need to have your major focus on the web. You could have but it's a subscription service.
It's a bit of both, and I'll certainly hand over to...
The way books are going, rather than...
Yes, I know. I mean, I read it on my BlackBerry.
I can't read anything that small, so I will wait.
The goal one day is to, terrible for pulling it out, but if anyone's seen Harry Potter, those films where they have, those scenes where they have the newspaper and they're living, breathing videos, if you will, within, the goal is to have eventually a thin single sheet of paper that will deliver your New York Times or your New York Daily News. And the two of you seem to have a slight disagreement whether it was print or whether it was a paper or the web. It is, in fact, the perfect combination. It's one piece of flexible, bendable, downloadable, changeable paper, but essentially it would have to be delivered via the web itself so that what you see at 9 a.m. is, in fact, quite different from what you saw last evening at 6 p.m.
Like as thin as a credit card that you can actually carry. So you wouldn't be carrying paper anymore, but you'd be carrying something light and flexible. with an art person with paper. I mean, paper has changed through the years, and we might have a different version of what actually paper is. I mean, there could be something. That's what I'm thinking.
Well, you guys are working on
that. Yeah, we are. Yeah, I think we're working on that, as far as I know.
Yeah, it would be papers.
Well, right now, I think the iPhone does it the best. How many people have Apples and iPhones? And what's so cool is that you can, you know, you could expand it. You can, you could see just the story. You could see it the way it looks like on the web. The BlackBerry doesn't do that. It does other things. So we're getting close to that. I think it is a good suggestion. I love science fiction here. I've always been reading science fiction, and to me, that sounds a little bit like that, but it's going to happen, and I think it's going to happen sooner.
But I just don't know how it applies to the newspaper industry versus the cable companies.
I think everybody wants that.
Yeah.
I mean, newspapers, quote unquote, are not married to ink and newsprint. We're married to content and stories and storytelling.
Right.
If we can find a better, more effective, and frankly, cost-efficient way to deliver that content, we will hook our ponies to that one in a second.
Back to the previous issue, you did 14 iterations of the plane, and that's your job, and you did a good job. But I don't want to read 14. I want to read the last one, okay? And I think the people who go all day long should get a life, right? It's a kind of addiction.
I agree.
And I got 14. Okay, maybe.
But that issue was so extraordinary, yeah.
What's happening now, whatever's happening.
But maybe that is our life.
It's entertainment. It's info entertainment. In a way, you're creating reality rather than reflecting what's happening. I'd rather know more about more important issues, personally.
Like what?
What's happening in Congress, what's happening to the environment.
Well, we have updates on that on the Times, too.
Not all over the front page, not the details so that people can get it fast. It's often not
Well, that's why we have our prescriptions blog. We have a caucus blog, which updates what's going on in Congress. The minute something is happening, we have like four web reporters in Washington, two who work on the blog solely, and one who is a continuous news reporter like I am, and he knows what's going on in Congress, so we'll get that out. And if we don't want the reader to wait, we really are trying to do it immediately on our homepage. We're not just about the Michael Jackson, the plane crash, the sexy story. There are some pretty boring stories still, but...
Well, you're calling them boring, but they wouldn't be boring if people really cared what was happening.
But we try and make people care. Oh, no,
you're
we have .earth. We have .earth, our blog about the environment. Talk to Andy Revkin. He will
I don't know whether
get you excited.
This is human nature or what the paper's doing, but it's creating this entertainment environment instead of this people are supposed to be educated and literate to understand the issues and have an opinion and have some power. People.
Let's talk back to that. Let's keep the let's going. Correct.
That's what I like about it. So if you weren't interested in the plane crash, but my friend who saw it from her window, that crash, it was a landing, it was not a crash.
Right.
Every few minutes we were looking at it because we were that involved in it. Mm-hmm. But something you may be totally involved in, some bill in Congress, and you can go in and find, the 14 different versions of that that's of interest to you. So I think that's what it's doing. I think making the news much more democratic and
good
much
word.
More niche oriented because everybody can find what they want. You can find that obscure site that is focused in on the issue that you're interested in, and you can be really, really, really well informed on that particular issue. Whereas in the newspaper, you couldn't. You just couldn't.
It's two dimensional, as Scott mentioned.
Okay.
Yeah. But hold on 1 second.
Somebody's impulse in the newsroom is going to say, now we have to focus here and we have to put together
you know, a newspaper or something that takes the best of this or takes it, and you come back to the front page of a newspaper, or you come back to compiling something that is more of a newspaper again, because you've taken all the stuff that you're selecting from and you're picking the best of it, and you're making something that resembles a newspaper again. So it's almost the inclination is to come back to where you started.
Right, that's how we
Absolutely.
Get a homepage.
We
cannot put everything, every story vies for homepage
but
show.
But argue for coming back
yes.
to against your argument that we might not have papers in 5 years, does that argue that we may have something that doesn't look like this, but something that condenses what happened for the past 24 hours and puts it on a sheet of paper, or something that says, okay, you can't read every 5 minutes, but here's what we missed yesterday?
We may. I mean, think back to what a cell phone looked like 15, 20 years ago. Probably roughly sized like this,
yeah.
Versus the super thin iPhone or BlackBerry you may have in your purse or pocket. To take that example, when we sit down, frankly, every hour, if not every half hour, and figure out how we're going to update the homepage, it's exactly like the newspaper editor sitting around
right.
a table, 6 p.m. or whenever they're deciding how to program the front page of the newspaper. What can we give the reader that gives them a mix of the most important news, paper-wise, of the day, website, of the minute? And we try to offer something for everybody, but the beauty of the web is if you're not getting what you want from a homepage,
mm-hmm.
you can dig just a little bit deeper, whether you choose to do it on your own or whether you use a Google or a search engine or even a third party who is of like mind or like choice, argument's sake, a Drudge or a Real Clear Politics, and have them do the work for you. I mentioned Google Reader earlier. It's a wonderful service. I'm a bit biased because I do love it. What I deem a wonderful service from Google, where it will cull what you tell it to cull. It'll go out and search the sorts of stories and the sorts of headlines that you're interested in. So if we're not doing it to your specs, let the machine do it. They might not do it to your specs either. They may be a bit better. Hopefully not. We were talking before everyone arrived about what those guys are doing at Yahoo and Google. Does anyone go to Google News on any regular basis? They're wonderful. They tell you what's popping or buzzing or popular on the web, and they give you the content straight from the sources. So we'll keep going back to Flight 1549. They would have probably as their first source the New York Times, second or third source, the Daily News, perhaps Associated Press, maybe the BBC, reputable news sources, culled together in one place on an extremely important and well-searched, well-read story of the day. Excuse me, but they're doing that with math. They're not doing that with a human being. We still offer the human being. So that's one place, perhaps, to come back to what you two ladies were saying, where it is like the olden days or the newspaper production is.
Did you want to add?
I'm just not sure if you're democratizing the news or individualizing it, which does not create democracy. Democracy is people coming together, discussing.
We
have little separate groups.
We do that.
Okay.
We have Room for Debate, another blog. We have reader comments.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a discussion. As much as it's individual that you can go click on whatever you're interested in, there is a forum, whether it be that interactive forum talking about Michael Jackson of all people, or readers sending their photos from the inauguration. I think that is very, very much the essence of democracy. And more so these days, people are offering input. And they're also emailing us, too, if they like a story, if they don't like a story. When I was writing my book about runners, I decided that everybody has a story to tell. Everybody loves to talk. All you have to do is ask. And now we're asking on the web, and it's amazing the reaction we're getting.
I have a question for Liz.
Yeah.
You started out in the St. Pete Times.
I did.
And as the old-fashioned way, like, you know, front page, Cary Grant or Ross Russell kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That sounds great. Wonderful question. The pressure has changed. I wouldn't say that it's more, it's just different. There was a great amount of pressure trying to file a 12-inch, 600-word story from a high school press box in Sarasota, Florida, when it's pouring rain, thundering, and lightning, and a football coach is yelling at you. So that was different pressure. As a writer, I certainly have matured over the years. I would painstakingly just pore over every word. It had to be perfect. And in this day and age, we don't have time for that. I was very fortunate when I was on my book leave to work for NBC during the Beijing Olympics. I worked in the research room, and there are a lot of us. There were still some other journalists there, including a Sydney Morning Herald web editor. And he said, I've got the slogan. I cannot do the Australian accent, so I'm not going to try. And he said, if it's wrong, it's not wrong for long. And I thought, well, that's rather liberating. Everything doesn't have to be perfect. When you're writing a book, everything has to be perfect. And I actually wrote my book really quickly, too. I only had 4 months for the first, and I wrote every single day, and I was here almost every single day. And then I revised that. But it was quite a change. Get it out fast, be accurate, go back on it. You read something and you say, oh my goodness, I have a comma, I shouldn't have this comma here. You race over to the homepage editor and say, you can fix it on your system, fix it immediately, and then I'll go back and fix mine. I have learned to, and maybe this is just my own maturity, to not have my standards as perfect, and I've realized that my standards are still higher than so many folks. I have this distorted view of standards. I think they should be perfect all the time. But I think it has made me a faster writer because of necessity, but it also a writer. I've taken in so many different subjects, whether it be Olympics, whether it be earthquakes, and I've been able to just condense it, and I have a better sense of this is news, this is what people want to read. Whether or not the web had a lot to do with it, I can't quite say. I think it's just 20 years in the business. Thank you.
Jerry.
I was just thinking, a lot of what we've been talking about is people who are prone to addiction as opposed to people who are not prone.
It is.
Even with Kindle, I have a Kindle which is changing everything in that whole area. But I think, I don't know, it's what you get used to. And so, you're on buses and you see people with cell phones, you cannot even for a
minute. I know. I know.
Not read about it the next day. But I think once you've seen that plane crash and they give you a general idea that everybody survived, there weren't any deaths in the pilot,
right,
the bureau and all that kind of thing, all of that you could get pretty much in 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. Instead of all day long. So I think, I mean, people who just want to know, hear it again over and over, see it again over and over again. Now, that process, I think, I don't know when you, in this audience, this is the middle of the day, so people are not, well, most of us, I guess, are retired, I would think. Otherwise, you'd be working. You guys are working.
Well, writers have very different lives.
They do. Yeah.
No schedule.
Yeah. Well, anyway, my question is, how much of this stuff that you've been talking about is a requirement for a democratic society that is, we're all exposed to things regular kind of way, and we have all sorts of choices. We say you don't lose anything. Paper you throw away the next day, generally speaking. And here it's there forever. I mean, that's great too. How much do you think it has to do with simply the age of people and how adjustable they are to things? I mean, this is a phenomenon. You guys,
I think you're younger than I am.
Things will change in your life.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, you hear, you know, things in the air. If you want to just, you know, open your ears and find out. So who knows what's going to be 15, 20 days?
Well, there are kids just graduating from college who have not lived without the internet.
Yeah.
And I take a stab at it and guess that a not insignificant portion of them have probably never read a printed newspaper.
Never.
Sorry. I mean, 1% would be a significant number, but I'd say just from informal polling around the company, from the kids who are interning and such, maybe as many as 10% have never read a printed newspaper. And a print intern, a kid who's working for the print newspaper as opposed to the web, and there is still some division at the Daily News, came in the other day for her first day on the job as an intern, and the assignment editor asked her if she had read the paper, and she said, yes, I read it on my iPhone. And he said, no, the actual paper. She said, no, I've never read the Daily News. So he said, your first job is to sit with the print vehicle every morning. So
Does that sad you at all?
It's tragic, absolutely. Absolutely tragic.
Why is it tragic?
It is perhaps a bit nostalgic and a bit loving of history, but this medium, for all intents and purposes, has not changed since Gutenberg put the final screw in his printing press. It's been the same. And the web is changing all of that, but we all grew up with newspapers. That's nostalgia, and newspapers have been there for all the important minutes, for all the important moments, and you can't trade the ink on your fingers. And fact is, this paper is literally the fabric of our lives. I hate to sound like an advertisement, but look next time you're in the subway or on the bus, you'll see the Daily News everywhere, from the trash receptacles to, sadly, the floor of the train. And it would be tragic to see that go away.
Right. That is the question I wish I had the answer to. We are trying to... Well, we have the advertisements that we are selling, and we are still the number one newspaper website in the world, as I had mentioned, but how do we make some money off of that? There are a couple different pay models that we are exploring right now. How long will it be free? I say, I don't know. I've already been throwing out numbers. So, no, I think I wish I knew. Maybe a year or two.
As
well, it is, but I mean, I think some of our operations, even though they are streamlined, we are looking to find ways to pay for the web with advertising, with people paying at some point. I think someone had mentioned the problem. If you have one newspaper that is charging and four others are not, CNN is free, who's going to read you? That's the concern we have, and the Time Select did not work. How many people actually got Time Select here? The pay where you would pay for the columnists. Wow. Okay. You actually got it if you got a subscription to the Times. So, yeah.
I have a question for you. I was wondering, writing your book, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but was the writing of the book very different for you as a writer than the writing you're doing every day for the paper in terms of how present you were in your subject or in your characters?
That's a great question. What's different now about my job is that I'll come in and I don't know what I'm going to be writing about. It could be anything, whatever is breaking that morning, and I just adjust. And having covered 18 different sports, I think you get to learn to do things quickly and become an expert immediately. My book, I was immersed in it, but I had many different people I was focusing on. And the New York City Marathon is such an amazing event because there's you can talk about the neighborhoods, the history, the people who run, the professionals, the recreationals, the volunteers, the founders. So I was able to diversify while writing this book. And not every day it was not, I'm in Brooklyn and for 5 miles and I'm just going here. I had to focus on many different ideas, themes, people. But I also had a deadline. So I had to have this book in so it could come out for the next year. And so 4 months is pretty quick in the book world. So thank you for the study rooms on the fifth floor.
I'd like to say just one thing. I agree with
All right. Although, you know, that's okay. The Dodgers Yankees would be good. Yes. Absolutely. There's still people who care so much and are so passionate about not just print, but news in a traditional form. I think there will be a backlash because we're a democratic society. What do you think?
I agree. Excuse me, with everything this lady said.
I think the Times will be publishing in 5 years.
Absolutely, yes. And
maybe 20 years. Let's move that ahead. But
and not to put words in Liz's mouth.
I know. But we can turn off. That is the, somehow, and it's not just going on vacation to the Cayman Islands. We can turn off. We can decide, I'm not going to turn on the TV. I'm going to read a book this morning. I'm just going to read the paper.
You really can take over, you know, take more of your time than you can, more of your attention than you can. This happened to me. I'm researching something for a story that I'm writing. Something attracts my attention. I'm going, well, next thing you know, it's a half hour later, a half hour I haven't gotten paid for, a half hour hasn't been written.
Well, we're writers. We're great procrastinators. I don't know about you. I know my eyesight's gone.
Anyway, it's something to think about when you're immersing yourself in this supposed to be the
Well, on that note, to mention what this young lady said in the front, it's the same with print, in as much as if you buy it for the A1 story, we sure as hell hope you're going to read section C, page 15 as well. If you were to digest the Daily News or the New York Times, you'd spend respectively, from cover to cover, you'd spend respectively anywhere from an hour to maybe 3 hours with the New York Times.
Who has 3 hours?
Right, who has 3 hours? But you're right, it is a danger. And I'll take some blame, if that's the right word, in the fact that as a person running a website and hoping one day that these vehicles can in fact be the way forward for newspapers and news gathering companies, that we may keep you on our website for a while, that when you come in for the story on Iran, you might stay for the story on the Yankees, or the story on the Dodgers, or the story on the New York Marathon.
No, I agree. I was an Italian Renaissance history major in college, so naturally I became a sports writer. And I spent a lot of my time in libraries, and I loved going back to the archives. I just, there's something, And sadly, I think in 30 years, we're going to have kids saying the archives, and it'll be the paper today. Mm-hmm. But the primary source material that I had to work with was thrilling to me. And I hope that thrill does not leave us. And I don't want us all to be depressed about it. I think the best part about the web, we are really harnessing the best part. And that is an interactive feature that, like the Michelle Obama feature, that serves the reader and gives the research that we have done to the reader. And there are so many great things about the web, and I think that compensates for what is a little populist and a little tragic, if I could use your word.
Please do.
But,
and I'm really hearing what everybody's saying here, but I want to bring up some realities. That I live in Harlem, I could not get the New York Times delivered when I lived there.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
And what the web has done is level the playing field. I'm not saying that everybody can afford a computer, that everybody can afford the Kindle. A lot of what was reported in the Times wasn't the in-depth stories on a lot of things that everyone wanted to read. And I think what the web has done is made some of those smaller stories, those niche stories, those stories about others, much more available and I think that while I think there's some loss there, the gain so outweighs it, especially in terms of where our society is going. It's made the news much more my news. You know, the whole thing on the Times of what would you like? There was so much in there that I would like that wasn't in there. That now is on the web. It may not be a major story. It may not be a front page story.
Like what? What story? Like a local story, or
just much more depth on some, like on the Serena story, much more depth. And again, it wasn't necessarily like even what we're saying about the crash. I mean, that would have been maybe the front page story 1 or 2 days, but it wouldn't have been 14 stories, and seeing in detail, and that's what it's allowed. That's what it's allowed the news to become. It's broadened it much more. What everybody likes can be found. The web that just couldn't be in a newspaper. And I've edited a magazine. You have page counts. You got so many certain ads, you can only have, I don't know if it's like in a newspaper, certainly in a magazine. Your page count depends on the number of ads you have. So there's only so much you can put in. Whereas with the web, you can get much more in. And I think it makes it much more accessible to a wider variety of people.
What is your name?
Adrian.
Thank you. You're hired. Great. I know. It's thrilling.
Whereas you couldn't, there are places where you couldn't get the Times.
I know.
So you come back 2 or 3 weeks later and you're so out of it. And I remember those years. And now you come back and you get right back into the conversation. You know what's going on. That's a real benefit.
That's very well said. There's something magnificent about the point of a kid in Peoria having same access to the New York City public library system as a kid on 42nd Street.
Exactly.
Yeah. Everybody wants to talk.
I just have a question. You did mention, I spend a lot of time with 18 to 24-year-olds. So, and this is maybe just a thing, because most 18 to 24-year-olds, as you said, are interested in electronics. I mean, that's what they do. Also, they've been trained about the green movement. And I'm just wondering, how is the newspaper industry seeing that green movement? I mean, there are going to be people complaining about paper in general. The oil that takes to produce it, the trees. I'm not one of those people because I'm a paper person. I'd like to save papers, all paper. But how are you dealing with that? That I haven't seen that movement attacking the distribution of newspapers in the morning because I get my Times. Nobody's saying anything to me. But I'm expecting that at any moment.
a lot of the paper's recycled too.
Yeah,
that we're using.
Not really good enough these days with 18 to 24.
Yes, but these are using more electricity, burning a lot more.
Well, that's a different argument. What I'm
saying
is they're just trained to think this one way.
But this is important.
I know, I understand that argument. I'm just saying, how do you deal with that particular little kids saying, well, paper?
I personally have no idea. But I'm looking at my colleague Marie in the back of the room, who actually may have an answer. Sorry to put you on the spot, Marie.
With regard to, you know, the green movement is definitely alive and well in New York. But I think much to Scott's point, what he said before about younger people, they're not picking up newspapers like they used to. And I think to this fundraiser's point right behind it, they have bigger fish to fry, so to speak. There are the CFLs and light bulbs, and there's oil, and there's a lot of a bigger impact on the green movement with regard to, I think, what the important issues are for younger kids. And I think newspapers, sadly, in that priority list is way, way, way far down. I mean, as Liz pointed out, it is still recyclable, so it's something that you can pick up, you can reduce, and you can return back. And I think, like I said, oil.
So let's agree to keep it in this room, shall we? We'll expunge that portion of the video. Ma'am.
Every generation has to be left behind. So those of us in this room will probably still have print to the time we die. But clearly, if you look at your grandchildren there, it's all electronic. And I think the key thing is that you want young people to care about the world and be keeping up. And you're making that possible.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Right.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I was going to say this a moment ago. I certainly don't want to put words in Liz's mouth, nor our collective bosses, for that matter. But the New York Times and the Daily News are not going away. Perhaps the newspaper medium itself will go away, the actual printed paper product. But our companies, as news gathering sources, are not going away. We will find, we hope, a way to be delivered in whatever medium may come down the road and remain there to tell the stories about the world and New York City.
We still have an appetite for news, and we are here because we are passionate about reporting. And whether it be in terms of packaging, it's still news, it's still reporting, and it's more realistic, perhaps. But the heart is still the same. We're still trying to report it first, and report it correctly.
It's a generation thing. We have two grandsons, and I talk about Cole Porter, and they have music. And so I say, now listen to the music, and I mean there are lyrics, if there are lyrics, mostly just tell you about what I appreciate is good lyrics. And so I will say, listen to. You don't like that light cold water. But listen to the lyrics and say, that's your big mistake. You're not supposed to listen to the lyrics. Just get the beat. The music is what we're interested in. And the lyrics, E and this, are just silly. They're repetitive. So, I mean, there's no answer to that, is there? But you say, well, that's the way it goes. So that's generational.
It is.
I don't think our grandkids read newspapers.
Well, they read
them.
They live in Vermont, and they do read their local newspapers.
Yeah.
Well, everybody wants to read high school sports.
A great lead is a great lead, whether it's in ink or on
the... I had the opportunity to be Chico Morris' great-great-grandson on Sunday, who told me that there are some really great sites where he can listen to Jack Benny and Gracie Allen, and he loves them, and he was telling me all the jokes. So I thought there's definitively hope in this world.
More so. Yeah, it's a living, breathing archive.
I just remembered, when I came to New York, the New York Daily News was doing ads all over saying that the New York Daily News, your hometown paper, and they were very much trying to make everybody own it, and it occurs to me that what you've done is exactly that, with bringing it to the web and to the people.
Well,
that
thank
has
you.
Turned, has turned it into a, more of a hometown paper.
Yeah. And more respects, more so than the Times. I mean,
yes.
I think, you know,
but I mean, in general, what you all are doing on the web is making it more inclusive and more of a hometown paper.
Thank you. Yeah, we try. And to stay true to that motif is something it's a struggle we fight every day, because we have great interest in the wider world, and sometimes I'll be the first to admit we lose sight of the world around us. But I do very much appreciate that comment. Thank you.
I work for Democracy Now, Amy Goodman's Democracy Now, and we just moved to a beautiful new state-of-the-art studio in Chelsea. When we moved from Chinatown, the production department didn't have one carton. Everything was paper. Mm-hmm. Everything was papers. And we had cartons and cartons of other in different departments. And it really, I'm an old lady, and I tell you, it's just changing, and we get big. The old lady's going to get rid of it.
I know.
Because the world is changing very fast. And it's exciting. Yeah.
Well.
I don't like it all, but it's exciting.
Well, Liz, I'll ask you, maybe on that note, to wrap up. It's been, you said, a year and change for you. How has the job changed from that moment to today?
When I came into the office, I had never worked in an office for 5 days a week, so that was an immediate change for me. What's happening now is that we used to be in the continuous news department writing stories during the day, but now we have our Paris Bureau, it really is continuous. We go every day, every hour we have somebody on duty all around the world. And I've learned more about that because I've worked in the foreign section, metro, business, sports, style. I have worked all across the paper. And what's changing is that each section is becoming faster and more cognizant of how important the web is. At first, the national section said, no, we have these reporters, we have to get the story just the way we want it. And now we have a national reporter filing two quotes to me. I've looked at it on TV, a press conference like with Blagojevich, and we've put something on the web, and they've rewritten it 3 hours later. Now, that is something that's been happening. I think in the first couple months when I got there, it wasn't quite as streamlined. So we have to get it. We can't be the old lady anymore. And it's not perfect, and it's changing every minute.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow they're dealing okay without me today. So. I just want to thank all of you. I know this has been a really lively discussion. Thanks, Scott.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
And we can, of course, answer more questions if you have them afterwards. So.